everybody. It's Michelle Fisher, and welcome into A View From My Window. Today, we are on location at the 2012 Summer Leadership Institute's National Conference of Executives of the ARC, looking at the changing dynamics of programs and services for people with developmental disabilities and preparing for the most effective response as a group through community organizing, education, autism, and so much more. So sit back, relax, and come along. Lots of people to talk to and information that I hope will be of help to you. Now we're here with George Cease, CEO of the ARC of Delaware in New York County. Hello, George. How are you?
I'm good, Michelle.
It's nice to meet you.
Great to meet you, too.
Great to meet you. We are talking about several different subjects at the conference today. This is the NCE Conference of the Executives of the ARC, and you and I are going to talk about, is abuse inevitable? So talk about that. Why is abuse so prevalent?
I think there's a lot of reasons, and chief among those, too much faith in individual people, and individual people left to their own devices make serious mistakes.
Sure.
And I think there's a lack of understanding of that. Mm. I think the alternative is that we need to create the kind of systems that ultimately build a culture where abuse is not inevitable.
Right.
Even though we know that whenever we're dealing with people, there are risks. There
right.
are many risks. But our job is to We've got to minimize those risks. And I was at a similar kind of meeting as this several months ago, and I was listening to people talk. It was kind of break time. People were just chewing the bologna, and somehow this topic came up, and I was just listening, and it bothered me that good people in positions of leadership basically were sending the message that, you know, it's inevitable. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
And that really... It really made me stop and think and say, you know, we need to have this conversation.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know? We need to have this conversation because it's not inevitable. Bad things happen all the time.
True.
But we can do a lot more to reduce those possibilities. We can do a whole lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And there's many factors. You know,
sure.
one of it is that belief factor that we're you know, that it's a. It's not just a belief, it's a commitment that we can meet people's needs in a way that doesn't push them, but rather helps them. I mean,
mm-hmm.
we all get into this work to help people.
Sure.
But because the systems aren't there, the support isn't there, because of maybe bad hiring that's gone on around us, you know, we tend to get beaten down and our ideals get crushed along the way.
Sure.
Or compromised.
Sure.
And you know, what we've learned is we had a wonderful guru as an organization and as a mentor personally, a wonderful psychologist named Dr. Gerald Burday. But what Jerry taught us was this belief that things could be different if we truly embraced a few principles. And one of those was that not everybody's cut out to do this work, you know,
right.
and that we have to find the right people and we can't settle for less than what we need, even though, you know, and here's where the reality of the economy sets in, you know. Our workers are just not valued enough by society.
Yeah.
So, you know, pay is not what it should be. We've got to hold out to find those people who want to get on board with us, no matter how long it takes. And
yeah.
once we do, then great stuff happens. It's because it's, you know, we talk about eliminating abuse, but, you know, the other spectrum is happiness and growth and development and more independence for people.
And
that's what we want, right? So the more we do that, and the more we're able to gather that cadre of people working with us who are all committed to that, to seeing people. I tell my staff, I want you to view every person you serve as your grandmother.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Treat them like your grandma. You know, you wouldn't think to push, to hurry, to rush,
exactly.
to insult,
exactly.
to ignore, to do all the little things that then cause the other person to react, which then causes me to overreact, which then leads to abuse.
Yes.
I think there's also a few other big factors that come to play, and we talk a lot about the problem of boredom in people's lives. You know, and if you think about anybody out there, when the kids and any listener thinks about their school age years, and when did they start to fool around in class?
Yeah.
It's when they were bored.
When they were bored.
It was either when they were bored or when they had a teacher they didn't like. But, you know, when you're responsible for lots of people's lives,
yeah.
And, you know, boredom to me is enemy number one. We have to keep people engaged, and we have to keep them engaged in things that they like and things that they want.
Yeah.
Just like Grandma. I can't teach Grandma to play baseball.
Right, you know? Exactly.
I've got to go with what Grandma wants.
If she doesn't like it,
you know,
yeah.
If she doesn't like it, you know, she's not going to be very cooperative or happy. And then, you know, how do I deal with her?
Yeah.
You know, and what goes on from there on? It's just,
yeah.
You can kind of see it unfold before your eyes. And so, you know, I think the systems have to be built around the right kind of values.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we talk a lot about core values now. You know, 10, 15 years ago, less common. Now, everywhere you go, you hear about core values.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, one of the exercises I'd like to do when I'm training is I ask people, quick, write down your core values of your agency. And
yeah.
You got to see the panic that sets in.
Because they never think about it, do they?
They don't think about it. And you know, and my point is, if you can't even tell me what the values of your school, your hospital, your rehabilitation agency are, how can you live them if you don't
True.
Even know what they are?
True.
And, you know, and we're talking about living those values and
True.
With people who don't even know what they are. Or they, you know, they put them on a website or a baseball cap or a coffee cup, and they think because they do that everybody that sees them believes them.
Right.
And it's not really true.
Yeah.
These are a lot of false assumptions out there. So I think, you know, you know this idea of truly being values-based, having the right values, making sure that all employees and volunteers and share, truly understand and share those values is critical. And then I think it's about, you know, taking our time to find new employees who share those same values.
Yeah.
That's hard to do. It's really hard to do. And, and it was part of the training we did yesterday with this group of folks here was the whole day was spent on recruitment. And
mm-hmm.
how do you find people that share your values and the importance of that? And then I think, you know, we've got to shift. And when we talk about making the shift happen, part of that shift is in the head of our leadership.
It's a scary thing, though.
People, you know, everybody wants change as long as they can do things the same
way
old
they
way,
want to. Yeah.
You know, and so we need leadership that doesn't mm-hmm. accept that. Leadership that says, you know, get on board or get out,
mm-hmm.
you know. And we've got to shift from this perspective of employers as supervisors, managers as bosses and foremen.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to make that shift to supervisors and managers as coaches and supporters. So that once I do find that good employee, that person with a lot of potential, I can't just then hire them and send them out to the wolves. Because inevitably, they'll make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Even good people will. So even the best of people need coaching and support to keep them on the straight and narrow
and to
refine their skills and get better at what they do and better and better and better. And that and when you do that one person at a time, pretty soon you're starting to build a culture
mm-hmm.
that's positive,
mm-hmm.
a culture that is productive,
yeah.
a culture that's caring.
Mm-hmm.
And when you build that culture, right there, you're reducing the risk
yeah.
of abuse.
Yeah.
You know,
when all these things come together,
it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it is a beautiful thing. So, what's the future look like?
For me, a lot of hard work trying to spread this word to people.
I love that.
You know? But it's also exciting and fun because there's a lot of people out there that really do want to get better.
Sure.
There's a lot of people that
just need a team
learn.
Behind them.
They need the information. They need to know it's possible. They need some models.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like show me how. And you know, we have a pretty effective this shift happens model is pretty effective. It's not the only one, but it is one.
Yeah.
And I think that you know what I've said in the rehabilitation community is that our greatest strength is that we're all different, but our greatest weakness is that we're all different.
Yeah.
And you know,
we need to
focus on where we can learn from each other and what we are doing well. But we also have to realize that we can't invent everything on our own. You know, we've got to look to others and try to find those rare pockets of excellence and learn about them.
Mm-hmm.
And learn about them and turn them into our own. You know, learn the basic fundamentals.
Sure.
We're not saying that we can clone people.
Sure.
What we are saying, though, is that people can learn basic principles and then make them
apply
their
them.
Own. Right?
Yeah. So, George, what if people want to know how they can help?
You know, I think one place to start is to go to our website, www.delarc.org. And what you'll find there is a variety of wonderful videos that will talk to you about the Shift Happens approach, but will also expose you to a number of employees at all levels, from entry-level folks to director-level folks, who I think may help convince people that there truly is a better way.
Yeah. George Sheese, Delarc, New York, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome.